Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Marianne Williamson and the news coming up as well. First, I'll tell you about Madison Reed. That's right. Madison Reed, Mister, that is. Well, Madison Reed, how does Madison Reed work? Well, their company, and they made hair coloring for women. They did such a good job. Somebody said, well, why don't we make them for men? And that's where Madison Reed, Mister came in. You can get rid of that salt, put a little more pepper in there, works nicely in the beard, works nicely around the temples, natural look, not that weird Sharpie shoe polish look. Lynette loves it. Gina loves it as well. Put a little dollop in. I use this stuff. Put the gloves on, get your hair color matched up, go to their website, put a little dollop in, work it through your hair with your fingers, then put the activator in, wait 10 minutes and rinse. That is it. Natural hair color brought back in a smooth and unjarring way. It's Madison Reed Mister, right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code Adam10 for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam10.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Marianne Williamson's birthday cocktail party for July 8th. Let's see who's on the guest list. The inventor of Coca-Cola, John Pemberton. Let's hope he brought the original recipe. My, I'm so happy. Because Ferdinand Von Zeppelin is here. Hey, mama. He's the guy who founded the Zeppelin Airship Company. The founder of Standard Oil, John D. Rockefeller. Wolfgang Puck is on the menu. So is Angelica Houston. Toby Keith is here, and he wants to talk about himself. And tonight's entertainment, with two turntables and a microphone, we welcome Beck. Marianne Williamson is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Marianne Williamson is here. The podcast, the Marianne Williamson podcast, premieres Wednesday, October 28th on Apple and Spotify. Her website, marianne.com. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
Gina, in particular, is a massive fan of yours, so she's going to be weighing in more often than normal on this one. So be prepared for that.
It's a warning to our audience, really.
That's right. So, Marianne, your story. Let's kind of go back to the start. Where do you grow up? How do you grow up?
Houston, Texas. I was born and raised in Houston.
And what do you think you're going to be doing, like, when you're in high school? What is the thought?
I thought I might be a lawyer. My father was a lawyer. My brother is a lawyer. I have cousins who are lawyers. So I thought maybe that. But when I was in college, I studied a lot of comparative religion and philosophy. The kind of career that I have didn't exist at that time.
Right.
So even though I was interested in spirituality, et cetera, I didn't see myself being a rabbi. I didn't see myself being clergy. So I thought that those interests would always be sort of secondary. And also, to be honest, when I was growing up, there wasn't the pressure that I think young people feel today to decide. I was pretty much just kind of hanging. And then things sort of unfolded. I didn't set out to do what I do because what I do didn't exist. It wasn't a career niche.
Yeah.
I ended up doing.
It's interesting.
Same for all of us, really.
All of us.
Yeah, well, really. As you, like, what does John Lennon say? What happens to you while you're...
Well, no, it kind of strikes me that when you're young, you have the pieces to the puzzle, but not the order to put them in. So they don't form a clear picture. You know, I ended up making my bones in radio. And when I was 19, I was just walking through the halls of Valley College in Van Nuys, California, going, do you guys have a radio show? A radio thing, and people are like, not really. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go dig ditches for 10 years. But there was a piece of my puzzle that was always talking about radio, but there was no place to put it. And so it's essentially like you have all the main components of your puzzle, and you could form a photograph, and if you could form a picture, you could follow it or understand it, but they're all in the wrong order. And it only in time can you go back and see that those pieces were kind of floating around the whole time. You just didn't know what to do with them.
That's absolutely true for me as well. And also, don't you feel that you wish you could look back at your younger self and say, just relax. It's going to happen. Because
Young,
you're like, oh my God, what's it going to be in 10 years? And, you know, I'm now in an age. I don't even want to think about it, you know. But that's what I wish that I'd been able to do more. Was to realize, of course, you don't realize it when you're young, there is a thread here. It's going somewhere. It's going to happen. But I guess when you're young, you don't have that sense of...
Well, I have these conversations when I talk to my buddies about the good old days, and they go, yeah, we're all thin and 23 and having the time of our lives. And I'm always like, I wasn't having the time of my life. And they're like, why not?
Barely getting by.
And I was like, I wasn't having the time of my life because I kept thinking, what am I going to do when I'm 35? Mm-hmm. How's this going to work? How am I going to pay a mortgage? How am I going to raise kids? So I was sort of thinking that I'll never be able to do this. And it was harsh in my mel. It was killing my buzz. Yes, Brian.
It's funny. It's an insightful comment you had, Adam, an observation, I should say, about the bones being there. Like when you're young, like I've mentioned it before, probably once or twice on the show. I really wanted to be a sports writer. That's all I wanted to be for years. I wanted to be a professional sports writer. I realized that now looking back, I didn't have any interest in like the writing or like in the day-to-day travel. Like, you know, that interested me. It's what this is, which is the exchange of ideas, the debate, this is interesting. What do you think about this? You know, talking to interesting people like Marianne Williamson. This is the bones of what I wanted to do. I just manifested itself at the time as sports writing.
I said it a couple times too, but when I, in 1989, maybe 1990, when I was sitting around with the director of the Acme Improv and I was completely rudderless, and I just said, like, what do you see for me? And we knew it wasn't a writer or a stand-up or a sitcom star. He just said, you need some sort of job where you just sit around and talk all day.
Well, you got it.
And, yeah, bingo.
And, yeah, a scant 20 years later, podcasting was born. So, Marianne, I guess we should talk. First, Gina should ask 5 questions, and then we should talk some politics, because you've been up on that presidential debate stage. But go ahead, Gina.
And congressional. So I used to go to see Marianne Williamson speak weekly at the Saban Theater on Wilshire. And it's so crazy. Chris, I don't know if you have the picture, but I was just going through my Facebook memories today. You know, you get one on every day. And the one that came up today is a picture I took in a park. And it says, we help another person access their highest access by accessing our own. Growth comes from focus on our own lessons, not on someone else's, at Marianne Williamson. That was today. And that was from 7 years ago. And that was in my Facebook memories from today with hashtag yes, ma'am. Because I'm a big proponent in so much of what Marianne teaches and has to say. So a lot of people, I would imagine the vast majority of our listeners are not familiar with A Course on Miracles, Return to Love. And the word miracle, I think, is very divisive because some people run toward it and some people say, oh, that's for crazy people. But your definition of a miracle is so accessible. I'm wondering if you can enlighten us.
Well, the book, A Course in Miracles, which I speak about, talks about how a miracle is just a shift in our own perception from seeing life one way to seeing life another way. You know, there's a cliche, or you're going to see the glass half empty, or you're going to see the glasses half full. Another way of seeing that is, are you going to just talk about what the person did wrong? Or are you also going to think about what they did right and what they tried to do right? Are you just going to blame that person and judge that person? Or are you going to give that person a break and forgive them? Are you going to only talk about the past and the future? Or are you going to show up in the present? And are you going to face this situation out of fear, or are you going to open your heart and be more loving to the person in front of you? Those might sound like little distinctions, but they're actually huge, because that decision, which we always make either unconsciously or consciously, but we're making that decision every single moment. Are you going to open your heart or close it? Is going to determine your energy. It's going to determine the subconscious things that other people are picking up about you. It's going to determine how relationships and situations unfold. So it makes a lot of difference whether you approach life through the eyes of fear or through the eyes of love. And that's what a miracle is, when you make that shift to the higher thought, to the loving perception. And you see this played out in huge ways in our society today. People who are facing the world with fear, hatred, racism, bigotry, anti-Semitism, homophobia, etc. They face the world one way. And then there are other people facing the world, or at least trying to face it, through tolerance, through inclusion, through love, through compassion, through mercy. Those distinctions are big in an individual life, and in a collective life, they literally determine the fate of a nation.
What's a culture that embraces that philosophy? I don't know, with more than a couple million people in it, but like, is there, what are some of the cultures that are out there that for us, there's a couple things I've always kind of been interested in. And it's like, we don't have much of a psychology in our culture. More than a pop psychology. You know, we don't put an emphasis. It's almost like diet and health. It's like, why don't we put a bigger emphasis, you know, for the kids? I mean, we approach like diet in a kind of rudimentary way, like knock off the soda pop, you know what I mean? But we don't do a good job culturally. With diet, we don't do a good job, like, sort of holistically with psychology and mental health and all that we've learned over the last few years. It's just not something that's discussed. Is there a culture that sort of has a greater emphasis on that?
Well, a couple of minutes ago, we were talking about when we were young, right? So I'm not romanticizing the time of our youth, but we did, at least I did. I'm in my 60s. So I remember a time in America, not where we were all good, but where the general consensus was that we were supposed to be. We were supposed to try to be. You know, it's the truth of all the great religious and spiritual systems. If you saw a racist, you at least knew you're not supposed to be racist. Now, when it came to things like food, when I was growing up, they weren't poisoning the food with chemicals the way they are now. They weren't poisoning the food with all the with things like factory farming now, with things like the devastation that big agriculture has brought, et cetera. There wasn't the kind of environmental devastation to put so much poison in the air. So you just kind of assumed that you could just eat three meals a day. You weren't thinking you had to proactively try to be that much healthier. And I think that we're just at a point of realizing how unhealthy our society is and what a price we're paying for not proactively trying to be good. We're not proactively trying to have ethics. We're not proactively trying to have character and mercy and compassion and forgiveness and health, proactively cultivating health. So we're not doing the things you're saying we're not doing. But I think part of what's happening in our society, in our country today, is telling people the terrible price we're paying because we took our eye off the ball. And we've been just searching, we've been all just in this mad grab for a certain kind of corporate bottom line of profit, power, plus prestige. And I think there's a great awakening going on in our country. We realize the terrible price we've paid by forgetting that trying to be good people really is the most important thing of all.
Well, let's talk we'll sort of weave that into politics, which is, I agree with what you're saying, but I don't know how we can kind of legislate don't be racist. Like, I don't know how we put somebody in charge, local, state, or beyond, and somehow we can legislate not being racist. Like, how do we fix that? How can we fix it at that level, or do we fix it at that level? I mean, it's got to be fixed at home, obviously, but how does it work? How do we legislate that?
Well, first of all, you can't legislate it. But until recently, there was a golden mean in politics, whether you were Republican or Democrat. It was understood, there was a general consensus, not that we didn't have bigots, anti-Semites, homophobes, racists. We've always been there. I mean, you know, until we're evolved as a human race beyond those things. But there used to be a consensus on both the left and the right that those people were nuts and they should not be given a major megaphone by either major political party. We thought we had reached that point in our society. So what's happened now is that the levies have fallen, partly because of social media, and partly because we have a person no less powerful than the president of the United States that says things, who says things that we thought we had gotten to the point where no Democrat or Republican president would say. So a large part of this has to do with the character of leaders. A large part of it has to do with the responsibility of tech companies. You know, this is what we're going through in our country right now. As Mark Zuckerberg decides, well, do I take down the Holocaust denial or not? You know, I mean, this is what this society is grappling with because we never had this before. We never had what these tech platforms bring, where people with really crazy perspectives and dangerous perspectives have megaphones the way they do on social media platforms. And we never had before a president who was so blatantly expressive of the worst aspects of the American character.
Well,
we're dealing with this right now, and everybody's trying to decide for themselves how to deal with that.
I think the problem is essentially we weren't meant to process this much information this fast, and it's overwhelming, and it leads to depression and anger and anxiety and lack of sleep, and then all the
confusion,
all the bad stuff that comes when you don't get enough sleep and you drink more, you eat junk, whatever. But so here's a concept I've never really put out there, but you guys can all think about it. We're not meant for this. I know we're not meant for this. And it's sort of like, it'd be like a Twilight Zone if somebody said, when you were in the ninth grade, don't you wish you could read everyone's mind in your school? Wouldn't you want to be able to read everyone's mind? And of course, if you ask a ninth grade version of me or any one of us, you'd jump at that chance. Like, I could find out if that boy really liked me or not, or I could find out what the answers were on the test by looking at the teacher and all kinds of things. And so we bid on it. We said, I want that. I want that ability. Again, it's like a Twilight Zone episode. And someone said, fine, you'll know what everyone is thinking all the time. So then you went to the boy you had a crush on, but he wasn't thinking about you. He was thinking you were a little overweight and that he'd rather be with your friend. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, God. Like, it was devastating. And you
thought, Brian Bishop.
That's right. And then you thought that, then you read what the teacher was reading. But the teacher was reading, was saying, oh, this guy's not college material. He's not even junior college material. And all of a sudden, now you have all the information that you thought you wanted, except for so much of it is so negative, and it just keeps streaming in. And then you think, I know I could fix this if I just got more information and I could find more. I'll find someone else who has a crush on me. But it turns out that guy doesn't have a crush on you, or he does, but now he doesn't anymore. So we made this little deal with the devil, like the Twilight Zone. And now we're getting all this information. And then imagine we're just a kid in the ninth grade walking through a crowded hallway in your junior high with all these voices in your head, and every person you pass, they go, did he just fart? Like, just everybody, oh, not him again, or the coach is going, he's never going to make the team, you know. And it's all, well, how fast before that kid would be overwhelmed with depression, eating disorders, and eventually probably kill themselves? Thoughts, panel.
What you're saying is very true, and I think it's what the entire society is reckoning with, beginning with what you said originally, which was the human brain. This is very new. This evolved over millions of years. And you woke up in the morning and to the sun, and then when the sun rose and the sun set, and there were natural rhythms. All of a sudden, technology has introduced this constant ubiquitous assault of information and data that technology has brought forth. And you're right, the brain itself doesn't know how to deal with it. And it has turned us into an entire society of people who have no impulse control. Now you have things like the Social Dilemma film that came out recently, right, talking about the addictive quality of all this. Yep. And also when you said that you didn't used to know what people were thinking, and now you do know what they're thinking. Well, when you didn't know what they were thinking, they had time to think about what they wanted to say before they said it.
Right.
Now, everybody, it's not necessarily what I was thinking, except at that exact moment in a reactive mode. So our lack of reflection, our lack of thinking deeply, our lack of responsiveness rather than reactiveness, I think that's one of the reasons why COVID in its own way has had a, it's interesting how sometimes the worst things deliver some unexpected gifts. The fact that we've all been forced to sit down and think a little more than we had before. The only good news about what you just said, in my opinion, is that everything you said is what everybody's thinking about right now. At least we're finally facing, this has really gone too far. We're out of our minds. And I think that people are realizing that on a very individual level, each of us has to do our own part, whether it has to do with not being addicted to the device, not being so reactive, being more thoughtful and reflective, because all of us can see in our society today what has happened because we took our eye off the ball of just being better human beings.
Well, in lieu of so much education and mindfulness and Tai Chi and meditation and everything, because that's such a long and difficult path for a lot of people, you just have to shut your fucking phone off, people. You just have to get away from it. I mean, we could work on all the mindfulness in the world, or you could just physically get away from your phone, you know, X amount of days. I mean, just for a starter. I mean, I feel like a dietitian just going, just stop eating so much. Yeah, just it off.
But you know what? It's not as simple for people who have a real food problem. It's not as simple as telling people to just stop because they're addicted. And it's not, particularly for parents who weren't on it with that from the time our kids were little. If you have little children who at the age of 3 or 2 or 3 are already looking at tablets and they're already being programmed to think that the action's on the screen rather than human beings. And then when they're 13, you say, hey, everybody, we're not going to have the tablets at dinner table. Your kids, some of these kids are already so, once again, the word is addicted. So unfortunately, this has gone so far that for many people, it's not as simple as just say no.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the alternative is.
We have to. I agree with you. And I think that movie's, I mean, I think that we are reckoning with that. I mean, I don't know anyone who's not. I am. I get it. I get it. Because I used to tell myself, I have to have my phone with me because my daughter's young and she might need me. And then I got to the point where she really, the other way she could contact you, you really don't need it anymore. Once again, I think we all know this now. This is a conversation. The good news is it's a conversation everybody's having.
With Zoom school, I can't imagine things are going to get better before they get a little worse. We have a 5-year-old in the house whose first introduction to kindergarten is on a tablet. It's sad. He does physical education in between the dining room table and the bar. It's sad. And the thing that I've noticed most is when a kid says something right or does something, the teacher, who's amazing, and there's a reason for this, you know, everyone's just trying to figure it out, says, oh, we love that. Send him some love. Everybody send hearts, send hearts.
Oh, because like likes or whatever.
Yeah, right. Because they don't have a choice. They're not in the same room. And I thought, oh boy, send hearts. And he's 5. And that's the new precedent.
The sad irony is they're doing their best.
That's not going to, you know, that is temporary. and we'll be back to it. And also, I think when it comes to some of these Zoom calls, I think we can see it right now. I mean, in some of the Zoom meetings that people are having, we're recognizing how much you can do on Zoom too. I don't associate Zoom with the kind of addictive texting, checking social media all the time. It's enabling us to see each other's faces more than we would have in meetings down the conference room table.
Well, we're engaged. You know what I mean? We're all looking at each other right now, talking to each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
So let's,
seeing their faces more than they would be if the child was sitting three rows back.
Yeah.
Let's talk politics, because you've been up on that stage more than once. We have another debate going on in a few days. Why don't you sort of coach us through it? Well, I'll tell you what, I'll challenge you with this. If you were working for Trump and Trump would listen to you and you could magically tell him what to do and he would do it, what would you tell him? And then I'll ask the same question about Biden.
I would never work for him.
All right. Sorry. I tried. All right. Okay. Let's say you work for someone who isn't going to be in the debate. Let's say you work for Bernie Sanders.
Okay.
What would you tell him to say Thursday night?
Well, Bernie Sanders is the one politician who I don't think would need any coaching. Because Bernie Sanders would, you know, it's kind of like when that actor, who's the one who was with Katharine Hepburn for so many,
Spencer Tracy.
And somebody asked him how you act. I think he said, just open your mouth and tell the truth. Bernie Sanders is one of those rare politicians that opens his mouth and tells the truth. And I try to be on my campaign, someone who opened my mouth and tells the truth. And that's what we don't have enough of in politics. And that's, I believe, one of the things that has hurt our society so much. We've become a market-based society. Everything is about making the sale. We're practically auditioning rather than dating each other. Everybody's trying to be who they think they need to be in order to get approval, in order to make the sale. And politicians do that too. Politicians aren't speaking enough about what people need to hear. They're thinking too much about what they think people want to hear in order to vote for them. We're not having enough political conversation about what people need to hear. And I believe that Bernie is among those who do have that conversation. And my experience as a candidate made me think people actually want that. You know, if you eat junk food enough, you kind of want a healthy meal. And
Right. Yeah. So
much junk in this society, including junk politics, that I think there's a real hunger. There's a real hunger. Can somebody be real and talk about the truth and be authentic so that we can actually fix the problems that confront us? That's what I believe the winning ticket will be for future politics.
I always say, you know, Hollywood understood this a million years ago, as ham-handed as they always are. Every 4 years there'd be some movie with Kevin Costner where he was kind of the aw shucks president, you know. Well,
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the archetype for the politician who just tells it like it is.
Right. Like Hollywood got it. America doesn't want the Brill Cream and the teeth whitener and the slick fast talking salesman. We just want the truth, man. And he gets up there and talks about his flaws and talks about he's made mistakes. And Hollywood was onto this. They've kind of always been onto this, but we never really got onto it politically at that.
Oh, I think we were. I mean, Harry Truman was famous for, you know, just see, oh, Harry, the things Harry would say.
In the recent past.
In the media era.
Also, my experience as a candidate has led me to believe people do want it.
But when you have
a political system that is more responsive to the money, to the corporate money of their donors than to the actual will of the people, then you have a political class that is very, very tempted to say what they feel their donors want them to say rather than what people's hearts and minds are actually begging them to say.
Now, I think you were onto it with your junk food metaphor, which I hope you were, which is, it's so true. As much as you crave junk food, after eating too much of it, you just have this yearning for some broccolini and some piece of salmon. Like, we've all been there.
Yep.
And maybe we're there politically. Let me give you a plug, Marianne Williamson. The podcast, the Marianne Williamson podcast, premieres Wednesday October 28th on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. And you can check out her website, Marianne.com. Marianne, thanks for joining us. And it'd be nice to talk to you for an update when some of this stuff shakes out.
Thank you. Nice meeting you all. And Gina, thank you. And so nice to meet you.
This was an honor. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marianne. All right.
God bless. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
I'll hit red cap, and then we'll do the news right after this. That's red cap with a K, not a C. Red cap. It's one of the oldest makers of workwear in the country, outfitting our essential workforce for nearly a century. They have something for seemingly every industry. Coveralls, high visibility work shirts, oil blocking chef coats, and shop shirts as well. The coveralls are outstanding. They sent over a big chub pack for all the boys here, and we love them. They're top quality. They've been around for a million years. And right now, you go to redcap.com, enter promo code Adam, and get 20% off your first order. This offer ends November 20th. So get in there and buy some top tier industrial grade workwear that's perfect for any day job. That is redcap.com with a K, promo code Adam. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Troubled in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, I have an update on the Anchorage, Alaska scandal of the century. If you remember the names Ethan Berkowitz and Maria Athens and that hot, piping hot audio we played a few days ago, which was pretty awesome. He has resigned. Ethan Berkowitz has stepped down as mayor, admitting to having an inappropriate relationship with Maria, who made online allegations against him, you know, that he was a pedophile and put his junk on the underage girl
website. The good news of stepping down as mayor of Anchorage, Alaska, that if you get a job at a Costco in Encino, it's kind of a lot lateral move. You know what I mean? Like a lot of guys fall from grace. Like, oh, he was the mayor of New York City. And then,
hey, I recognize you.
Right. But Anchorage, you get yourself a decent job as a clerk at a law firm. You're right back to even.
That's right. Well, now they're bringing in Austin Quinn Davidson. She'll serve as acting mayor of Anchorage starting next Friday. Yes.
On my list of things to do, like jump into a body of water with a knife in my mouth and have my hands registered as weapons in Nevada and stuff like that, I at some point would like to step down from a position.
Oh, sure.
It's negative, but it means you've achieved something, right?
Yeah, you got some juice.
Right. There's a scandal brewing. Mm-hmm. I have to step down.
That's good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Quinn Davidson is a 40-year-old attorney, will be the first woman and openly gay person to serve as mayor or acting mayor of Anchorage. And they don't know what they're going to do from here. They either let her stay and finish out, or they're going to just have her as a placeholder until another election. They're figuring that out. But Berkowitz is out.
Well, good. Yeah, that was some incredible tape.
Oh, it's the best. So a second excavation began on Monday at a cemetery in an effort to find and identify the victims of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre, according to NBC News. And the reason I bring this up, by the way, is I don't remember ever learning about this in school.
Well, I wouldn't know the name if their AAA baseball team wasn't called. I mean, out of the Tulsa area, the Tulsa race massacres.
Right. But that's the only reason you know them.
Right. It's like I've only
on the jersey.
Right. I wouldn't know.
The violence happened on May 31st, 1921. And that was when a mob attacked the Tulsa's Black Wall Street, killing an estimated 300 people, wounding 800 more, robbing, burning businesses. They tried to excavate in 2018, but they came up empty. However, they used this at the time groundbreaking radar that began appearing to be a human pit indicative of a mass grave, but they were wrong. It was a creek. It happened 2 years after what's known as the Red Summer. Another thing I don't remember learning about in school, when hundreds of African Americans died at the hands of white mobs in violence around the U.S. And if you're HBO watchers, the show Watchmen really takes an unflinching look, the first episode or two, at the Tulsa race massacre, and also Lovecraft Country, a new show on HBO. A science fiction show, but has these themes.
As soon as I'm done rewatching all 9 seasons of The Love Boat,
yeah,
I will be moving on to Watchmen. That's for sure. I got
Watchmen is unbelievable.
But I have to prioritize.
Love Boat unbelievable or just unbelievable?
You're right. It's Love Boat, everything else, Watchmen, then the rest of TV, but it's so good.
See, I think everyone thinks I'm making a joke, but I'm doing like a sociological study. I'm doing an archaeological dig. I'm doing what they did. Like, I want to know what this culture was like in 1980. And if you watch The Love Boat, that's it. That's how we dressed. That's how we thought, mores. That's how we spoke. That's all there because it's prime time network Love Boat. That's all there.
I just gave you a new title. You're a media anthropologist.
Yes. If you want to know how women wore their hair in 1979, watch an episode of Love Boat. That's how women wore their hair.
Very smart.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, from Japanese internment camps to the Tulsa to Black Wall Street. I've never even heard that term until I was an adult.
I feel like our history classes are a bit Eurocentric.
Yeah.
I always wondered why. And I thought, is it just too shameful that a teacher just doesn't want to stand up and talk about this with children? I mean, I'd never heard of Japanese internment camps until I went to college.
Oh, well, you didn't hang out with George Takei enough.
That's true.
True.
Yeah.
Sorry, Japanese American internment camp.
Oh, do not make that mistake in front of George Takei. He will always correct you.
Are you familiar with the rapper Nuke Bizzle?
Nuke Bizzle.
You shouldn't be until I play you a part of this incredible song.
Okay.
This rapper who I thought you might have seen this on TMZ, who bragged about defrauding the government's unemployment program in a music video, has been arrested.
Oh, yeah. That's a TMZ story. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Oh. I'm thinking of like Nuke Muzzle or something who is... There's a thing about crime. Part of crime is not bragging about crime, because you know.
Indeed.
I was watching someone from last week. He had like a paintball gun and he was filming himself driving around through neighborhoods, like shooting at cars and like shooting at people and laughing it up. And it's like, well, you don't want to put that on TV because,
that's evidence.
That's what you call evidence there. And I guess rapping about defraud. Yes, I heard this case. Yes, I know this one.
This is the new if a tree falls in the forest. If I commit this amazing crime, but nobody knows about it, is there anything for me to celebrate? Because this is amazing. He was arrested on federal charges of carrying out the exact scheme he raps about in the video, according to the DOJ. Fontrell Baines, he's 31, he goes by Nuke Bizzle, was arrested.
Your name's Fontrell Baines, why change
it? Stick with it. That's
I know.
After applying for more than $1.2 million in jobless benefits and using stolen identities in a scheme to fraudulently obtain unemployment insurance from the Coronavirus Relief and the CARES Act, if convicted of all the charges, he faces 22 years in prison. Besides the best lyric, which is, you gotta sell cocaine, I just file a claim.
Right.
Here's another part of the song that's getting a little attention.
You gotta sell cocaine, I can just file a claim. Rats coming straight to the bank, I'm doing shit that you can't. Nigga, I'm smarter, you ain't. EDD scale and this thing that you heard about. I be so happy to certify. Get on that laptop, I'm working out. Be 25 clans in 4 hours. She changed my life and I gotta admit it. More money, I swear I done had in a minute.
So he's giving a step-by-step on how to do this. You go on.
Young Money, Cash Money.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm thinking of
claims.
I'm thinking a Lil Uzi Vert. Chris is explaining. Sorry, I got my Lils and my Uzi. Lil Uzi Vert is the guy who takes the paintball guns and drives around and shoots up the neighborhood.
Well, he's Lil Uzi.
He defrauds the citizens of their retinas. That's what he's been accused of. Yeah.
So, yeah, he very well may be going to federal prison for decades just because he it would Dayenu, as the Jews say, it would have been enough to defraud the government, but then you had to rap about it.
Look, I don't want to go from old to mummy, but this new weird cadence for rap, what is up? It's just that's the rap, that's the cadence now. I'm looking at you, Max, about that da 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 da.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. Does everyone have to do the same cadence now, or could we somebody do something different?
I think that's a certain style. You're asking the wrong guy.
Okay. It seems even lazier now than it was 8 years ago.
Young Money, Cash Money.
Yeah.
I'm going to go from alabaster to eggshell. But the only thing I can base it on is it's very Cardi B.
Right.
Like, she's on top. She's the one who's getting all the success, and everyone's just kind of imitating her. Brian, I'm going to file this under the category of it was still alive. Coca-Cola just announced they're killing off Tab.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Oh, yeah.
No more. I didn't know Tab was still available.
I wouldn't have definitively been able to tell you yes or no.
It was their first ever diet soda. It debuted almost 60 years ago, but really hit its stride in the 70s and 80s.
I don't know that I've ever had a Tab. Oh. Is Tab good or bad?
It's bad. I mean,
it's some people like it. It's got a kind of bitter after note. Yeah. And it's basically diet soda before they really worked out diet soda when you knew it was diet soda.
Yeah.
And now you can get a diet Dr. Pepper or something that doesn't taste that diety. Tab tastes pretty diety.
Yeah. And those and that certain shade of pink on the can wasn't doing it any favors. That like Pepto-Bismol color that they went with.
No, but you knew what it was. Like you could always spot it.
Oh, sure.
And they probably ran a lot of commercials with like sexy chicks and stuff like that. I kind of remember from like back in the day.
I only ever knew Tab from Back to the Future. And Marty goes back to 55 and orders the Tab. Like, you want a Tab? You got to order something.
You haven't ordered anything. They're also getting rid of some of their other underperforming products, Odwalla juices. And I think, Dawson, were those the juices you were drinking, the Odwalla?
No, I was on the green machine.
It was on the green machine.
And Zico coconut water. They're all getting the axe.
Yeah, oh, really?
Gross. Those are sick.
Yeah.
Didn't
those come in like the paper? Like
it tasted
water?
Like vomit.
Yeah, I
wonder,
never had one.
The Odwalla, is that Odwalla? I always said Odwalla.
Maybe.
I always figured, at a certain point, people, I think, figured out, hold your ears, Dawson, that drinking one of those energy drinks or the protein veggies. Or the juice
smoothie.
Or the veggies,
smoothie,
you might as well just eat a cheeseburger like at that point. And so maybe people are catching up to that. I don't know.
For the record, I haven't drank one of those in about 2 years, and I'm doing the blended broccoli every
nice.
Day.
Nice. What's in the smoothie?
It's just blended broccoli and pineapple juice. Just a bunch of frozen broccoli and then cover it with pineapple juice. Blend it up.
Chris said you just ate 5 tacos from Del Taco.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
You have to eat.
You have to blend those.
It's true.
What the real question with the broccoli and the pineapple juice is, does it taste like broccoli or does it taste like pineapple juice?
Mostly tastes like pineapple juice.
And what do you think the ratio is? What do you think our broccoli pineapple juice ratio is?
It's awful thick. I just essentially pile up like a cup and a half of broccoli and then cover it with pineapple juice.
The so height of it.
It's a thick, yeah, I'd say it's about 70% broccoli.
Wow. All right. Good for you.
Yeah. Speaking of that, with my haul that I just did at the everything's 50% off Whole Foods run.
Oh yeah.
And I supermarket swept the store. I got like a giant, and actually, Brian, I thought of you. I got one of those giant, because they're selling whole hams, industrial size bags of cheese. I mean, everything. And I got this bucket of peanuts, bucket of pecans, and bucket of almonds. And
sharp.
Last night started throwing them in the old food processor.
Make your peanut butter?
Yeah, little pinch
God
of salt.
Bless
and
you.
Just a drop of Mexican vanilla extract.
God
and
bless.
I blended it all. I gave it to my fiance who's been in SNG since January 1st. And he's like, this tastes like candy. It's candy. So do you guys want that for your Christmas presents? Because I'll
not really.
I have mason jars. I have mason jars in there.
Them. What, why did Whole Foods go half off with everything?
They're renovating. They're renovating for 8 months.
Oh.
So everything on the store, they couldn't get rid of it fast enough. So I literally had so much in my cart, and I'm a terrible stacker too. You would have been horrified, Brian. I literally was pushing it with my hand and same hand, same elbow, and holding product with my other arm because I just couldn't get everything on top. It was all.
We're using the down below. People forget about the down below.
I put crushed tomatoes and low sugar sauce on the bottom because I thought if those fall, at least they'll roll. They're not going to splatter.
It's a good start.
Yeah. Now, but I went crazy.
This is a Whole Foods in Encino.
On Coldwater. And like Studio City is.
Studio City. So, and they're having them basically half off sale. So I'm picturing a couple of heavy set women of color duking it out in the front by the garbanzo bean section.
You know, you have
it's a Black Friday situation.
You have it completely off. I hate to shit on your point. All right. Well, a much different crowd.
I shouldn't stereotype. Was it slim pickings? Was it cleaned out?
Wow. No, I don't. I found out about it on one of those Nextdoor apps. So I don't know how fast the word got out, but I got smoked mackerel, things that I thought, well, if I wanted to ever try it, now's the time because it's on heavy duty sale.
Hmm.
It was a lot of fun. Smart. So speaking of drinks, you don't typically think of Pepsi as something to drink when you want to fall asleep, but the company's about to add a new beverage to their drink lineup, and it's designed to drink before you go to sleep. The name is a little on the nose. It's called Driftwell. It launches in December. It contains L-theanine and magnesium, which are ingredients said to help you relax and de-stress before you fall asleep. It comes in blackberry lavender. They're sold in little mini cans. And you can pound something made by Pepsi and see if that helps you go to sleep.
Well, we got to worry a little about that slippery slope of, you know, wake up with the energy drink and go to bed with another concoction, you know, this sort of up and down. And literally all this stuff is as much as you can do it, it's supposed to be from within you organically, right? So it's like you're supposed to get a good night's sleep and then you're supposed to wake up refreshed and energized as the sun comes up. And then after a hard day's work, you're supposed to detune and go to bed that night. And there's a certain amount of, you know, got a headache, take an aspirin. We all get that. But at a certain point, too many things putting in us to pull us. I mean, obviously the extreme of this is Elvis Presley, you know, I had to take these pills to go out on stage and then take those pills to go to bed at night.
Michael Jackson.
Right, right. Michael Jackson, Elvis Presley, Prince. So we don't want that. But isn't an energy drink and then a night-night Pepsi drink, is that kind of a loosely based version of the same principle?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's my life these days. CBD at night, coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh, you're an addict.
Does the CBD work? Does the CBD work for you?
Yeah, it helps me sleep very evenly through the night. I would wake up a lot because of medication, of course. Mm-hmm. And the CBD is a very helpful natural sleep aid.
Good. All right, Gina, what else?
The Flaming Lips are apparently going to play some shows, and everyone in the audience is going to be in a giant literal bubble. We have pictures of this. At first, I didn't think it was real, but apparently it is. So back in June, they performed inside a bubble on Colbert. And now, I thought this was just kind of a weird image, like, you know, like CGI. No, this is real. Go ahead and play it, Kaylin. So what you're seeing right now is, this is probably Wayne Coyne or, you know, whoever on like a levitated like stage in a giant bubble. And the audience each has their own bubble that they're dancing in. And he says, it seems absurd, but it's becoming kind of serious and real. We're getting ready to do actual shows where there's people in each of these spaces. And we play two shows a night and get a big audience in there each time. So we're seeing people dancing in these crazy bubbles. And there's a picture. And just because, again, this didn't seem realistic to me, show the picture of them setting up the bubbles.
Yeah, just I saw this on TMZ. How is it possibly work that you're dancing in a bubble without completely being drenched in sweat?
It's probably disgusting. I don't know.
Much as older, but like, what if you want to sit down for a song?
You could probably sit in your bubble. Show them the picture of
we're
the bubbles
still
getting
that one
set up.
We didn't have that one, Brett.
Oh, okay. Because it's very, or not, but just at first I was like, oh, is this, you know, camera trickery? No, there's flat plastic bubbles on the ground waiting to be inflated before the show. Wow. So if you got to go on tour, you got to think of something.
I can't imagine. It seems, look, everything is so, everything in that business, because I'm in that business to a degree, is really just based on units sold, you know? So it's like how many you play a nightclub, you sell 80 tickets, you make a little money, it's sell 380 tickets, you make a lot of money. It's just about volume, you know? And so when you go, well, the club can only be half capacity, you go, all right, well, now it's half the money. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had one of these funny discussions with my sister about this, which is, and I've had a few of these with people in my life. And you tell me if this sort of rings true, maybe a friend or family member. I said to her, you know, she said, oh, so what are you doing? I said, yeah, well, you know, going out and playing clubs, but they're half capacity. So they're half full. And that's how it works, you know. And she goes, well, do you get a pay decrease? And I said, yeah, it's half the money because the club is half full. And she goes, I bet those club owners got something worked out. And I said, no, it's literally they pay you how many people come through the door. And when half the people come through the door, then you get paid half. And she went, I'm pretty sure those guys are. And I just stopped her and I said, do you know about this business? She goes, no. And I go, well, I do. This is because I do it. This is my business. So I'm just going to tell you no. But it's a weird thing. You know that thing where people just sort of go off on their own, whatever? And the first scooch back toward daylight never works.
Mm.
The first scooch doesn't work. They're still busy going off on a thing. But the thing I love about it is they don't have to know anything about it. Nothing.
It helps if they don't.
I think it does.
It'd be more fanciful.
Yes.
Also, it's a bit of a flawed theory because between you and Mike August and every other comedian and agent working out there, you've all played these clubs before. Like, it'd be weird to like jerry rig or gerrymander the pay structure. It's like, I've played this club twice before. I know what the pay structure is.
Well, the real outrage would be, or the real, you should be curious if I said, well, we played a half the capacity, and then she said, do you get paid half as much? And I went, no, full freight. I get paid the same. That's actually a conversation.
That's fishy, yeah.
Me saying, we're getting paid, I get paid half as much because half the people are in the club. That shouldn't pull up alarm bells. But anyway,
trigger anything.
No.
Makes
that's
sense.
Why they call us the Corollas. By the way, as I get older, I get less patient. I'll just jump in mid conversation. Go, do you not think I know what I'm talking about? Or is this something you know about? Cause I don't.
Yeah, where are we going?
Where are we going?
In your younger days, you might have entertained this line of questioning.
Yeah. Yes. Opening for Pauly Shore in the early 90s. I guess you thought you learned a thing or two. This is one of those older guy things. Like I was saying to my mom once, I went, a couple of weeks ago, I called the number and the phone just rang and rang and rang and nothing. You never picked up. She went, well, I have an answering machine. And I said, I know, but it just didn't pick up. And she went, well, it always picks up. And I said, yeah, I know, but I called a couple of times. The phone just rang. Well, the answering machine, now I stop and I go, do you think I'm lying? Because that's where we're at. And normally it takes a while to get there. I just want to get there now.
Yeah.
Are you saying I'm lying? Do you not believe that I called you? If so, say so. Because that's essentially
that conversation.
That is what you're saying. So should we just move on and have that conversation? It's a weird thing, right?
And your mom would, and your mom's immediate response would go, well, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's always like, no, I'm not accusing you of a liar. And it's like, well, kind of.
There's only two possibilities.
There's really only two possibilities. Either I did it or I didn't do it. I'm telling you I did. You're explaining to me I couldn't have. It's kind of. Something there. All right. It's a bizarre people in the conversations. All right. We're looking at the pods.
But it looks like popped bubble wrap.
The jellyfish are washed up on shore.
Yeah.
The pods ain't free. And in the space that we're looking at 100 pods in a hole that would hold 1,200 people. So I mean, it's literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 or something,
it's
9, 10.
It's probably like between 80 and 100.
80 and 100. There's no math that makes this work.
There's no way this makes sense monetarily.
Absolutely. Right. But there's,
and then they got to clean them. They're doing two shows a night.
It's promotional. It's promotional.
The damage that's done to the pods. People are dancing in them on what I assume is concrete or some sort of hard floor.
When I was 19, I definitely would have chowed in that pod. No doubt about it. Dawson, you would have yacked in that pod, right?
I feel like I already have.
Yeah, so there's 75, 85 pods, but that ain't going to work financially. But, hey, we're talking about them, aren't we?
That's right.
I had no plans on talking about the Flaming Lips otherwise.
All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, we got Geico. You want to save yourself some real money during this Halloween season coming up? You always go with Geico. They're working even harder these days to save you that much more. Switching to Geico, not scary, especially when you can just brew up some spellbinding savings and they'll do it just for you. So you get a quote, you go to geico.com, see just how much it could be saving you on your auto insurance at Geico. That is geico.com. Steve Byrne, the stand-up comedian, all-around good guy, and director, writer-director as well, is going to be going to Jimmy O. Yang's movie, The Opening Act, which everyone says is great. I've got to watch that. So he's going to be in here tomorrow. I'm Your Emotional Support Animals, available as we speak. And get that on Amazon and wherever else. And write a review. I'll read it. West Palm Beach, Florida Improv, the 20th and 21st. Live podcast, early show, stand-up show, late show. And a fifth show. Because I ain't burning enough calories, we'll be doing Reasonable Doubt, Saturday matinee show. Mark Garagos is going to be there in the flesh. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for LeVar Ball and Marianne Williamson. I defy you to find a show with more range than those two. I said it at the beginning. I feel more strongly about it now, right?
Yes, 100%.
Gina Grad and Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on the Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Please leave us a voicemail. We want to hear from you at 888-634-1744. Go get yourself a copy of I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, the new book by Adam Carolla. It's available everywhere, and you'll get the links at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.